Hello, I'm Ivan Berg, and this is my story. Part 1, 1939-1945. By 1939, before the outbreak of World War II, 38 million gas masks in cardboard boxes had been issued to the British population for use in case the Luftwaffe dropped bombs containing gas. The gas masks had to be carried at all times and had to be put on as quickly as possible as soon as you heard the air raid wardens rattling their very loud rattles during an air raid. Gas mask drills happened without warning and even took place in the kindergarten I attended. My child's gas mask was made of black and red rubber, and I hated wearing it. It was disguised as Mickey Mouse in an attempt to make it fun to wear. It wasn't. It was horribly uncomfortable, suffocating and claustrophobic, and I couldn't wait to take it off. The round glass eyes quickly became fogged with condensation, and it was a real effort to breathe. The exhaust was a valve flap in the nose, and it made a farting noise when you breathed out. I was just 3.5 years old, but I can remember clearly the noise of a class of gas mask kids breathing out in a cacophony of very rude noise. Fortunately, Hitler never dropped bombs containing gas, so we never had to use our gas masks for real. It was felt at the time that Hitler was scared of retaliation, as he himself witnessed the horrors of gas weapons in World War I. I also became an evacuee in 1939. I had a label pinned to me and I carried my gas mask. Because I was so young, my mother came too. My father stayed in London because he had to work. I thought war with Germany was declared when we were on the train because I heard my first air raid siren as the train pulled out of King's Cross Station. So it must have been September the 3rd. We were evacuated to Letchworth, a town in Hertfordshire, 35 miles or so from London. I don't think we stayed long. It was the time of the phony war. London wasn't being bombed, so it wasn't long before we went back. We were part of a mass return to London and other cities by homesick mothers and small children. Back in London, I remember sitting on my father's shoulders in the middle of an air raid, watching the bombing of the London docks. My father pointing out the parachutes of the landmines as they floated down. I don't remember being at all scared. It was exciting. It was like watching a huge and non-stop fireworks display. On top of that was the strange droning of the squadrons of Heinkel and Dornier bombers, the searchlights trying to catch them, the boom, kaboom, boom, kaboom of the anti-aircraft guns, and the crash and flash of exploding bombs. That must have been at the beginning of the Blitz, in the autumn of 1940, when I was just 4 years old. Then it was back to Letchworth for almost 2 years with my mother. The one thing I can clearly remember is a raffle at Pixmoor Way Primary School for a beautiful green clockwork Hornby Dublo toy locomotive that I had set my heart on. I was devastated when I didn't win it. The almost 2 years in Letchworth are something of a blur. I remember my mother being sent to the London Chest Hospital in a place called Arlesey because she had a shadow on her lung, and where I was taken to visit her once or twice. I don't remember who looked after me. I did think it was strange to put a chest hospital in a place that was the home of the London Brick Company. We must have stayed in Letchworth because we couldn't go back to London because we had been bombed out of the house in 15 Saxe Road in Clapton. My name and address was drummed into me in case I got lost in an air raid. In Letchworth, the addresses I remember are 80 Hall Mead and 141 Pixmore Way. In Hall Mead, the back garden was dug up to dig for victory, and I helped plant potatoes and carrots. 141 Pixmore Way was almost opposite the primary school and was posh, a double-fronted house with a driveway and a pretty English garden that I wasn't allowed to play in. Then my mother became ill with manic depression. She was sent to a hospital in Epsom, and I must have been sent back to London. I don't remember seeing my father again until he rescued me from an awful Jewish Board of Deputies boarding school called Rowledge House in Rowledge, near Farnham in Surrey. As a tailor, my father was in a reserved occupation, that is, an occupation important to the war effort. I think he made uniforms, so he wouldn't have been conscripted into the forces. However, he once told me he was so incensed by the treatment of the Jews in Nazi Germany that he volunteered. He never got to fight the Nazis. He was trained as a lorry driver in the Royal Artillery and was sent to Iraq. How did I get to the awful boarding school? I suppose that with my mother in hospital being treated for manic depression, now called bipolar disorder, and father in the Middle East, something had to be done with me. So sometime in 1943, I went to stay with my father's sister Anne, with her husband Joe, a dry cleaner and valet to the military and thus in a reserved occupation, and cousins Paula, Mavis and Nina, in their large detached house in Medway, in Hampstead Garden suburb. Nina was my age, and the fun and games included the usual doctors and nurses, hide and seek in the huge overgrown garden, and parachutists, a game I invented that led to my downfall. The parachute game employed umbrellas in lieu of parachutes. I attempted to persuade Nina that it would be perfectly safe to jump out of a top floor window with an open umbrella. I said that the umbrella would work just like a parachute. Nina said that she would only jump out of the window if I did it first. Someone grabbed me just as I was about to jump out of the open window with umbrella unfurled. I don't remember who it was, but my uncle and aunt were rather upset, and shortly afterwards I was collected by my mother's brother, the Reverend Joseph Halpern, who lived close by in Golders Green, with wife Eve and cousins Ruth and baby Vivian, an Orthodox Jewish household. Uncle Joe was the author of a tome called A History of Our People in Bible Times, and was an upstanding member of the Golders Green Orthodox Jewish community, and I think was something to do with the Jewish Board of Deputies, a Jewish welfare outfit that, among other things, looked after Jewish child refugees and orphans. I didn't stay long with Joe and Eve and cousins Ruth and baby Vivian. It couldn't have been more than a few days. Uncle Joe took me on a bus to Bloomsbury and then into the Jewish Board of Deputies building in Bloomsbury Square. A rather nice woman, probably a secretary, brought me a glass of milk and some bread and jam and asked me if I would like to play with a typewriter. I remember typing out Mary had a little lamb several times, with lots of crossing out X's. When I finished the bread and jam, the nice woman pinned a label on me, gave me my gas mask, and took me and my small suitcase on a bus to a railway station, probably Victoria, put me on a train and said that some nice people would meet me at Farnham Station, where I assume she told the guard to put me off. Uncle Joe never even said goodbye. Of course, the nice people turned out to be a teacher at the awful boarding school for boys. I don't remember much about it, except that the younger boys had to fag for the older boys, run errands and polish their shoes. I remember trying not to cry during the day and then feeling unloved and unwanted, crying myself to sleep every night. I don't know how long I was there. It felt like a lifetime, but it was probably not more than a few months during the winter of 1943 and the spring of 1944. The experience was both traumatic and formative. I distrusted all my parents' relatives and even my parents thereafter. Even at that age, I realise that I must have decided that religious Jewry was not a club I wanted to join. The war sometimes seemed a long way away, but Farnham was still well within the range of the occasional marauding Messerschmitt 109 fighters, whose pilot liked to use up their ammunition by strafing, that is, machine-gunning targets of opportunity on their way back to France. I was with a group of kids on a bus when we saw a 109 diving down towards us. There was a shout of, "Everyone down!" Fortunately, the bus wasn't a target. The 109 was trying to evade a Spitfire on its tail. Oh, how we cheered and waved! Subsequent research by my daughter Sancha showed that Rowledge House was never a boarding school on the rugby school model. It was a small hostel set up for mainly kinder transport, Jewish child refugees from the Nazis. It was one of many foster homes, hostels, schools and farms set up by the Central British Fund for German Jewry in the months leading up to World War II. How Uncle Joe managed to get me in there as a child refugee, I will never know. However, my original seven-year-old's memories of an English boarding school do stick in my mind. They must have been based on something I had read at the time, and which are still remarkably clear. I was an avid reader, and maybe I got hold of a copy of Tom Brown's School Days. I am sure that this is a rare and unique episode of false memory. I did get the name right, the location, the collection from Farnham Station, how unhappy I was, and the rescue by my father. Before or after Rowledge House, I can't remember which, I stayed with my father's sister, Mad Aunt Betty, in a large detached house in Park Hill Road, Hampstead. There was a very old and very large mulberry tree in the very large garden. The tree is significant, as under it I witnessed Aunt Betty having a violent argument with a tenant, a short and swarthy man with, as it turned out, an evil and violent temper. I saw him pull a knife and hold it to my aunt's throat. She screamed blue murder. Someone called the police and I was the only witness. Mr. Swarthy denied that he pulled a knife, so I was put on the witness stand. I think I wet my pants. My father applied for and was given compassionate leave and returned to the UK from Iraq in what must have been the spring of 1944. And he and my mother came to visit me at Rowledge House. I was devastated when they left without me. Eventually, my father did collect me. I learned later that when he came back to the UK, he went straight to visit my mother in hospital and asked where I was. She said that she didn't know, but to ask her brother Joe. I was told that my father was furious that none of the family would look after me, and particularly angry with Joe for treating me like an orphan and packing me off to Rowledge House. I think he refused to speak to Joe for years. Nevertheless, when my mother was discharged from hospital in the spring of 1944, She had nowhere to live, so was taken in by her brother Joe. She insisted on having me with her, so I was collected from Rowlatch House by my father, in uniform. I felt proud and thankful and tearful all at once. I wasn't happy being back with Uncle Joe, but anything was better than Rowlatch House. London was being bombed by German V-1 self-propelled flying bombs, which all us kids knew as doodlebugs or buzz bombs. It must have been the summer of 1944 because that was the start of the V-1 Blitz on London. The V-1, or Hitler's Revenge Weapon 1, was launched towards London from Ramps in France. More than 8,000 were launched between June and September, causing enormous destruction and killing more than 6,000 people. I went to the Hampstead Garden Suburb Junior School in Child's Way, and there were concrete air raid shelters in the playground. Every time an air raid siren went off, the whole school had to march class by class into the shelters, carrying our gas masks. The shelters would have been useless if they had had a direct hit, as the doodlebugs carried a huge amount of explosive. I remember hanging about outside the shelter watching a V-1 flying over the suburb, waiting for the throbbing pulse jet engine to stop to see where it fell. But I was yanked into the shelter by a teacher, so I never saw it fall, just heard the boom of the explosion. Thankfully, we didn't stay very long with Uncle Joe, no more than a few months at the most. My father was posted to a London barracks, and a flat was found to rent in Hackney at 143 Victoria Park Road, E9. It was the first floor of a huge detached pile with its own drive. The garden was enormous, and the landlady owner of the house kept chickens. Three things happened there that I remember clearly. One, being attacked by the very large cockerel every time I was sent by the landlady to collect eggs from the chickens. It used to charge at me, wings flapping, claws and beak cockfight ready. Terrifying, until I tried flapping my arms and screeching at it. And it worked. Result, one startled cockerel stopped dead in its tracks. I never knew why I was told off by the landlady. Two, being spooked by the very close explosion of a V-2 rocket. I lost my grip on the tree that I was climbing in the front garden and slid down the trunk, scraping my left thigh deeply on a sharp bit of bark, and so gathering my one and only war wound. I knew it was a V-2 because I heard the tearing screech of its arrival after the bang of the explosion. I learned later from my comic, The Champion, that V-2s travelled faster than sound and that there was no defence against them, no air raid sirens, and thus no warning. I thought that very unfair. Over 1,500 V-2s were launched towards London. They were the first ballistic missiles used in war, and were the most feared weapon of the war, killing almost 3,000 people in London. The campaign lasted 6 months from September 1944. The V-2 that knocked me off the tree completely destroyed one of a group of blocks of flats less than a quarter of a mile away, leaving a huge crater. I had a cousin my age by the name of Rosalind who lived with her one-legged father in one of the blocks that fortunately wasn't the one that was blown up. Rosalind's father had been married to my mother's sister, Auntie Paula, who committed suicide by putting her head in a gas oven. The widower Manny Siddick lost his leg in one of the North Africa campaigns and for some reason blamed my mother for Paula's suicide and kept himself and Rosalind, a very pretty little girl who I had a real crush on, well away from any contact. I did see Uncle Manny from time to time when I bought sweets from the tobacconist and sweet shop he ran in Wells Street, close to the Orchard Junior School that I attended. I don't think I was recognised, but he was very grumpy. I suppose it was the leg. I remember watching the shop from over the road to see if I could catch a glimpse of Rosalind going in or out. We were together in Letchworth as evacuees with both our mothers when we were about 4 years old. I never saw her again. And the third thing, I said that the mulberry tree in Mad Aunt Betty's garden was significant. It produced amazing amounts of unwanted and unpicked mulberries. Walking round the tree when it was fruiting was a squishy experience. My father, still in the army and having something to do with the Royal Artillery gun radar emplacements on Hampstead Heath, seemed to get a lot of leave and decided to have a go at making mulberry wine. So he collected a couple of buckets of Mad Aunt Betty's mulberries. I remember him mixing them with loads of black market sugar, pouring the mixture into large stone jars and tying the corks down with wire. The jars, there were several, were then placed on shelves in my bedroom cupboard to ferment. This was at the height of the V1 and V2 attacks on London. I don't know how long later it was when I was awakened by an enormous bang. My mother rushed in, looked at me, and started to scream. No, it wasn't another V2 explosion. It was the exploding stone jars of mulberry wine. The gas spilled up from the fermenting mulberries should have been released from time to time, but it wasn't in my father's winemaking plan. Anyway, I was blood red, covered in fermenting mulberries. Screams turned to laughter when it was realised that I was perfectly okay, just a bit shaken. It was around this time that I had my very first ride in a car. My father served with a soldier who was a farmer in civilian life and who supplied off-ration and highly illegal eggs to his mates. One day, I accompanied my father on an egg-collecting trip to the farm. We went by train and were collected at the station by the farmer in a car. I think it was a Ford 8 or 10. The ride to the farm was far too short. I was allowed to sit in the front. Amazing stuff. Oh, the speed. Oh, the noise. It must have been all of 40 miles an hour. I was fascinated by the gear change and clutch. The driver knew his stuff. Like my father, he was trained as a Royal Artillery driver and knew all about straight-cut, non-synchromesh gearboxes and the double-de-clutch technique necessary to change gear. I became desperate to learn to drive and frustrated that I had to wait another 10 years. Then the war ended.